Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Tom Hopkinson of the Sunday Mirror. Got a quiet weekend planned? Me neither. It's not every day England are in a winnable World Cup quarter-final. Sweden will be obdurate, unyielding. But Gareth Southgate's team, and it is a team, has great mental strength. Sure, there are weaknesses, but they play for each other. Belief is total. Destiny calling, Tony?
Well, maybe not quite destiny, but there is opportunity. And I think given the way the tournament's opened up and the way the teams have got through, there is a chance. I think it's still an outside chance. But, you know, England haven't played well yet. And there are players there and there is pace there that gives them a shot at this winning it.
It's sort of almost an unreal experience being favourite to the World Cup quarter-final for England anyway. Can they handle that expectation, do you think?
Well, being in a quarter-final at the World Cup is a bit of a new experience for a lot of us. Being favourites in it, yes, I do think they can. I think there's a belief in the squad that, as you said earlier, you know, it's just total. Are they favourites? I mean, that for me is the question, though. I mean, I think a lot of people will look at Sweden and I look at the game and I think it's actually a tougher game. I was more confident going into the Colombia game that we could get a result against Colombia because I was expecting a more open and expansive game from the Colombians than I am against the Swedes. I mean, you look at the way they qualified for the World Cup, 180 minutes against Italy. Italy failed to score against them. This England team is not making chances by the bucket load. Was it 2 goals from 9 from open play? Not great numbers at all. So I think it's a good, solid game to go into in terms of confidence, but I'm not going in there bubbling away thinking this is a straight path into the semis.
And England's strength is pace, and they'll nullify that Sweden by sitting deep. Mm. There'll be no room in the final third. And I expect it's one of those where you open for Harry Kane to do something outrageous and get a half chance and make the most of it.
Just like the last 4 games.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But if you look at Sweden, you know, they are men with a plan, aren't they, really? They have a tried and tested policy, pretty old, experienced players who know it's their last chance. Mm. It's quite a good combination.
Oh, yeah, yeah. By all accounts, they were all popping champagne corks when Ibrahimovic retired from international football, the same way as PSG players were when he left the club to go to Manchester United. They're a unit and they really work hard for each other. I mean, in many ways, that reflects what England do. There's a lack of penetration with Sweden, a lack of goal-scoring ability. They're not going to hit you. But, you know, the thing which worries me is England's propensity to shoot themselves in the foot at the back. And this, at times, when they're trying to play the ball out from the defence, and you know, and everyone's saying, oh, this is great, this is wonderful to watch. I'm like on the edge of my seat going, waiting for disaster.
There's a Rick there, isn't there, with that. Yeah.
But credit where it's due, I think John Stones and Harry Maguire in particular in this World Cup have grown up. I'm with you on Stones pre-World Cup, where you did think that, as you say, there's a mistake in here somewhere. I think he's matured.
Yeah, he has. I mean, definitely over the last couple of years, the difference in him is unbelievable. And as you say, even in the short period of 3 or 4 weeks since they first reported for the World Cup, there's definite, you know, you see the characters coming over. I mean, I love the, there was a clip on the internet of him going over to introduce himself to Glenn Hoddle after the game the other night, and Harry Maguire followed as well. I think Trippier did later as well. And you're absolutely right. There is sort of a confidence. What I particularly liked, actually, it didn't seem to get mentioned in too many, so much everything else going going on. There was a moment when, just after Bakker had come on, Bakker fouled him from behind and went down and then tried to offer him the hand. And in what I can only imagine was broad Barnsley, John Stones told him exactly what he thought of it, refused to take his hand. It was very much a, you know, I'm not having that, you know, you might want to kick me and then shake my hand and think you're going to undermine me, make me look a bit weak, but I'm not having that. And that was lovely.
And he also gave the Colombians a volley in the immediate moment.
There's that great
victory,
photo, isn't there? Yeah, them both looking at Barrios, wasn't it? The lad who headbutted Jordan Henderson. And I mean, fantastic. But, you know, you've got two proper hard as nails Yorkshire boys, if nothing else, at the back, who are two very, very talented footballers. But I am with Tony on this one. We don't always agree on things, me and Tony. But I'm completely with you there. You know, when you see them playing it around a bit, you know, you might get away with it for 90 minutes. You might get away with it against Panama or Tunisia, but against a Croatia, against a Brazil, or France, that's going to be a much more difficult thing to do and thing to do without getting caught out. And you only need to get caught out once against one of those sides, and it could be once too many.
Is this a no more Mr. Nice Guy scenario? You know, there were elements of gamesmanship that England indulged in during that game. Mm. You know, we like to think ourselves of as holier than thou and not like those cheating South Americans, stroke Eastern Europeans, whatever you want to say. Is this now a modern, almost realistic football team?
Well, I hope so. I still think they're a bit naive. People want to see England as whiter than white. You know, you need a snide in the team. You know, I love all that. You know, it's I really enjoyed what Colombia did. You know, you need to disrupt people. You need to knock them off the game. And, you know, it's one of those things, you know, simple things when other teams are getting on top. You know, Ferguson always did it. Mm. Have a player go down, foul them all the time, you know, rotate your fouls. I don't think England are as good at it as some of the other sides in it. But yeah, I think they need a little bit of it, and I think that'd be good for them, certainly once they get to this stage of the tournament.
You think back to the best domestic sides we've seen over recent years, you know, your Manchester United's when you'd got Roy Keane going in there and mixing it up when they needed to, Vieira's at Arsenal, you know, every cracking team needs to be able to play football very well, which this England team, not quite there yet, but it looks like it's coming. It looks like maybe in, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years that will happen. But you need that bit of spite as well. Yeah. I mean, Manchester City as well, you know, you're telling me that Fernandinho and the likes haven't put their foot in. And you know, if a team comes to you and they want to play football, great, we'll play your football. Yeah. You want to come and have a scrap, we'll do that as well.
I think this team is undercooked by a couple of years. I think we will see the best of this England team in either Euros in 20 or in the World Cup in 2022. So there is room for improvement. How key has Gareth Southgate's personality been in the development up to this point?
I think he's been brilliant for them. I mean, he's great to deal with. He's very direct. He's a good communicator. He won't clutter the minds. He's not the greatest tactician, as we saw against Colombia. I think his substitutions were, well, frankly, awful. But he's got quiet confidence, and he's been there and done it. You know, this is a man who missed a penalty, you know, in the biggest game England had had for, well, you know, you could argue it was even bigger than the World Cup semi-final in never to tournament at home, you know, one of them against Germany. So he's been there, he's done it.
It felt quite sweet for him, didn't it? That,
yeah.
You know, I think everyone would have been very pleased for him
given
definitely. That penalty.
And the thing is, he's a nice person. You can't say that about the England managers of the past, certainly in my experience.
He treats people properly. That's the point with him. Yeah. You know, he is just a proper human being, and what you see is what you get. I mean, don't get me wrong, there will be a nasty side to him. There has to be, but it's always a constructively nasty side. You know, he's not going to ball someone out just for the sake of it. But then, you know, whether you're in the press, whether you're a fan, whether you're one of his players, whether you're part of the backroom staff, whether you're one of the higher-ups at the FA, he manages everyone very, very well.
He lets people know.
But you look at his ruthlessness, and let's look at Wayne Rooney. Where are you now? He's gone to the States with barely a whisper or a comment.
Yeah.
And basically, that was a decision that managers were afraid of.
Yeah, I mean,
dealing with Wayne Rooney on his own terms.
But it's one of the most difficult jobs in football, isn't it, that for a manager? You know, you're just to refer it to a domestic team side, you know, you think of the managers coming in at Chelsea when the great players are there. I mean, Alex Ferguson did it brilliantly, managed those, you know, he knew when his players were at the end and there was only ever one winner. There was an argument, or in some cases there wasn't even an argument. He just made the decision and they were gone. And I think Gareth Southgate has worked with some great managers over the years, and I know a lot's been made of the Terry Venables influence on him, and you know, when I think back to my most enjoyable time as being a fan of England. Terry Venables, that Euro 96 time was when it was at its absolute peak, because you got the same feeling with him. You got the same feeling from the players that they were there and enjoying it, but you got the same feeling from Terry Venables as well, that this was a bloke that everyone could relate to. And as when you look back at Sven-Göran Eriksson now, and I saw him a couple of weeks ago and did a piece with him, and he's a lovely fella, Sven, and very interesting to listen to. Still desperate in his 70s to get back into management, which I find crazy. But he did very well, actually, as England manager. But Capello, there was always that distance with him. And because of, you know, whether it's because Gareth, English is his first language or whatever the character trait is, he's just made this whole England team far more accessible. Well,
and he's also killed the myth of a celebrity foreign manager, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. International management is a different set of skills to club management, and that's clear. The thing is, you don't need someone to come in with a big reputation and a big paycheck. You've got to listen to this fellow, because he has all the theories. It's simple. And the thing that gets me about Southgate is it's always really simple, straightforward. You compare him to Roy Hodgson, where not much straightforward. The players didn't understand what they were supposed to be doing. You know, there was confusion everywhere. With Southgate, everyone knows what the job is. Everyone knows what they've got to do. There's no philosophy there except go out, work for each other, and play.
But he's not a yes man, though, is he?
I mean,
if you think back
to,
it was about 10 years ago, or maybe a little bit more recently, he was the head of elite development at the FA. Didn't like the way it was panning out. Didn't like the way the suits, the higher ups wanted him to interact with other people. Said, no, this job isn't for me, I'm going.
And here's someone who turned down the chance to be an England caretaker manager.
Quite
not,
right.
Not in my plan.
Not part of what I want to do. So he's not just going to, you know, he's not just doing what those above him want him to do.
Because he talks about, you know, the importance of the mental game and trusting in the process and all those sort of jargon phrases that we... Beyond that, is he all about just common sense? Prepare as well as you can, do your scouting, do your preparation, get on with it.
All these buzzwords sound good, and, you know, it's they can get you out of answering real questions to a large extent. But, yeah, everything is straightforward and simple. And I think that's the best thing about the way Southgate is doing things.
Everything at the moment is depending on Harry Kane, and he's carrying that burden brilliantly.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, 6 goals, he's only had 9 shots over the tournament so far. I read a piece by Ollie Kay in The Times where he basically said he's only received 79 passes so far in all the games we've played over there. The service has got to improve, hasn't it?
That is the problem position. I mean, when you think about the games that Harry Kane has played, I actually thought the other night, the Colombia game was his best game of the tournament, because, you know, he didn't get the goals that maybe he got in the Panama game, but he was brilliant. You know, he worked his socks off, led the line superbly, was kicked from pillar to post, and he invited the 3 or 4 behind him to push on, get closer to him, and they're just not doing that, and that is a real problem. I think Sterling, I know we'll look at Sterling in a bit more depth, but, you know, he's not getting to the byline as much as he should do. Neither is Jesse Lingard as well. You know, Lingard was excellent in 3 group games, and I just want to see him running at defenders a little bit more than they are doing. And we're lacking someone with an incisive pass as well. Ali, he looks off the pace. He just doesn't look like
he's not fit, is he?
He doesn't look fit, no. And he's not. I think maybe Lingard is the closest of those three to doing what he does at club level, but I just don't think Sterling and Ali are quite replicable, anywhere near actually replicating the form that we know they're capable of.
And, you know, Jordan Henderson in midfield is a willing runner. He's done a great job, but he's not the sort of man who'll unlock a defence.
No.
Who'll knock the ball through to Harry Kane. It's a big burden on Kane. I was very disappointed against Colombia to see that certainly after the substitutions with about 10 minutes ago, how deep Kane dropped. And, you know, sort of Vardy was the front man. Kane was effectively an auxiliary midfielder.
That looked almost Kane's fitness, though, didn't it? That he was almost dropping in because he'd run himself into the ground, which, again, was a worry, given that the whole reason for resting him against Belgium was so, you know, you would expect him to be able to last 120 minutes.
You know, you need an attacker like that. It sounds counterintuitive, but you've got to do less running. You know, it's...
More sensible running.
Use space wisely. You know, it's...
Which is what all the great South American teams have done.
Yeah,
Especially. Yeah. Oh, but the statistics that you've just mentioned, Mike, would suggest that Kane overall is doing that. I just think, look, he was up against a better defence. Let's not forget, he was up against David Sanchez, his club teammate, who knows a lot of the runs that he likes to make. He's with him on the field a couple of times a week. He's with him on the training pitch most days. So it's not as easy to play against one of your own teammates as you'd imagine.
Let's look at a broader point. Harry Kane has benefited from an apprenticeship in the lower leagues. I think it's interesting that Steve Holland, who I think is an underrated member of Gareth Southgate's staff, OK, we know him from his work at Chelsea, but he was brought up through the whole crew system. And it was interesting that Southgate made a point to his players, remember where you've come from. Mm-hmm. How important is the Football League in producing a team that the nation can be proud of?
Well, I think it's really important. I mean, without that infrastructure, without that network, and without the opportunity to play, Kane wouldn't be half the player he is now. Tottenham tried to get rid of him so many times, sent him down to, you know, to Football League teams. But that's where he developed, he grew, he matured as a player and a person. And we're seeing the benefits now. I think the loan system, I have quibbles about. But I think it really is important for a young player to get playing time, an important step on the development. I mean, you wonder whether Raheem Sterling would have been better if he would have gone to a lower level and played there for a portion of his career and got the experience there.
It's where boys are made men, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that, and I think you look at, we look at some of the skullduggery and dirty tricks that the Colombians used, but I promise you, a lot of the stuff that was going on that field was a mate of mine, Guy Branston, the things he would have done to a young lad coming through the ranks in years in League Two. You learn to deal with all those sorts of tricks, you know, the defenders rubbing the boot down the back of your Achilles, the little pinches under your arms as they're lifting you up and helping you up. And I think it's vital. I'm not so sure about Sterling because I just think, obviously, he was at QPR for a little while. I know part of the academy. I think he's flourished well with the moves he's made at Liverpool and Manchester City. And I'm not sure that he's the type of player who would have benefited from being kicked from pillar to post, as some of them have. But it certainly worked for Kane. It's worked for Lingard as well.
What does he need to do to deflect the doubters who are out there? I know there is an agenda against him. I've got a real belief in that. But if you look at Sterling, what has he got to do to say, look, I belong in this team?
I thought he played reasonably well against Colombia. What he did, which people don't appreciate, is he draws players to him. He creates space for other people. His crossing hasn't been great. His shooting was awful. And there are two parts of his game he can work on. But when he picks the ball up and runs at people, he causes havoc. They've got to get him on the ball a bit deeper. Then he gets it to it, not with his back to goal. Yeah. On the edge, although he wriggles really well and, you know, turns people. But he needs to pick up the ball, 40 yards out and run at defences, yeah. Mm. And then we'll see space opening up. He doesn't necessarily have to beat a man, but he just has to be direct and get towards them and bring those centre-halves or a full-back, bring them into him, drag a midfielder behind and just open up the space because... you know, the one thing Colombia did is worked really well at denying England space. And I'll tell you what, it'll be even more crucial against Sweden.
It's set up for him against Sweden, actually. Yeah, yeah. And I don't know about you two, but I was watching the game the other night and a couple of times he picked up the ball outside the area and you're willing him to score because you're thinking, go on, change the narrative about, you know, make this about you, seize this moment. The way things have gone for him, you know, the way he's been made the scapegoat, whether it's, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it's Liverpool fans still gutted about what, you know, the fact that he left them, but you know, it could change the whole perspective, the whole way he's seen. If he does something, there's that one moment of magic in the next game, and it'll be fantastic for him if he does.
You know, when I said the England team looks a bit undercooked, if you look at one of the central pillars of this team playing three at the back, that was only introduced against Germany in March 2017, and that was Michael Keane, Smalling, and Cahill in that three. Now, obviously, it's three completely different players now. Is that system here to stay? And is it something you think is a strength or a potential weakness?
Well, I think it's a strength in the sense that it's a way of using your wing-backs, getting your full-backs forward, and that's really crucial to the way England want to play. It's a strength in the sense that you look at them, if they played 4-4-2, you'd be a bit, oh, I don't know about that. It's not a good defence. You know, I mean, let's be honest. If good teams are going to cause havoc against that defence. For all Maguire and Stones, for all the plays well and all the mature, and as you say, they're undercooked, they're not quite there. The wing-backs are a little, you know, you can get behind them. So I think it's the best system for this group of players, and I think it's been very astute of Southgate to actually see that so late on and say, OK, we're going to commit ourselves to this, and I think we're going to see it certainly for the foreseeable future.
We've probably been a little bit negative about it as well. I mean, there have been some resounding successes. I mean, the way Kieran Trippier has played.
Yeah.
That penalty was terrific.
It's fantastic, but and he deserved that for the way, I think Gary Neville said after the game, actually, didn't he? You know, you're willing him to score, not just because it's an England penalty, but because you don't want someone who has been as positive and has played so well as him to all of a sudden be the person who's on the receiving end of the negative side of it as well. Trippier and Kane are probably the two who are coming out of it, and Pickford, of course, now coming out of it with the most glory. But I think it's probably important, you know, everything we're saying now is constructive. Yes, the defence has played OK, but it does need to raise its game another level.
Well, I think you look, you know, we talk about Trippier and everyone's eyes, he's had a great World Cup. He's had a great World Cup going forward. And the problem is, you worry about when they're on the back foot against good teams, are they going to be able to perform at that level as a unit? I've got severe concerns about that.
On that wider point, how much is English football in the debt of Mauricio Pochettino because of his ability or his willingness to trust young English talent?
I wouldn't say that English football is in Mauricio Pochettino's debt, but it's certainly been well received, the work he's done, and the fact that he has put his faith in young English players. And I hope it's something that other managers look at and say, do you know what? What's been key is the fact that they've identified those players as well. You know, I remember thinking when I heard that he'd had a little meeting or spoken to Trippier and all above board, I'm led to believe.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember thinking, why? You know, Trippier, yeah, good player, but you've got Kyle Walker. I don't understand that. And yet, completely. I mean, that's obviously why he's paid £4 or £5 million a year, whatever it is, to manage Tottenham. But the way he's identified those players, and Spurs need great credit as well. You know, Dele Alli, I remember when he went from MK Dons, you're thinking, well, all right, you've signed him, beaten Liverpool to sign him, we're probably going to loan him back now. But it was never the case. No, he's coming to play football here, and we are going to put our faith in him. So I think they've really prospered from working with Pochettino as well, because his man management. Mm. I mean, there are many traits that he shares with Gareth Southgate, actually, in terms of that man management. You know, that being very personable, very open. It's all about, you know, these crazy handshakes that we see that the three of us probably look at and think, we're from a different age entirely to that. That's all through him. You know, you shake hands with every one of your teammates, every one of your work colleagues every morning when you come in. It's about creating this group ethos. And that has, you know, it has paid dividends for England. But I think the way the group have got themselves together, and we could have said there's a Tottenham clique there, there's five or six of them, but I think all the players, the whole group, need a lot of credit. And Harry Kane and Jesse Lingard probably particularly need a lot of credit. And Cahill as well, as the elder statesman, in bringing everyone together and making sure that lessons have been learned from the past.
Yeah, but togetherness crosses boundaries, doesn't it? So you look at that Sweden team and they've got the same sort of traits. Forsberg, the Leipzig winger, looks to be the most obvious threat. Do you see England being vulnerable on a counter?
Well, yeah, they are. You wonder whether Sweden actually have the firepower to hurt them. I mean, I think they're more likely to look to profit from set plays, from, you know, from corners. They just lack a bit of a cutting edge. They'll be really solid. And that's why it's so crucial that England don't make mistakes at the back, playing the ball out. Don't make a blunder. Don't give them an opportunity for 95 minutes as well.
I mean, that was the one, you know, that was obviously the downfall on against Colombia was that set piece. They switched off for 1 minute. I think that's the point we've been making, isn't it, throughout, that this defence, and whether it's just the three at the back, whether it's the five of them or the whole team in terms of a defensive unit, there is a mistake, and Sweden are the sort of side who will punish you if you give them that opportunity.
They won't press, like, for example, a Klopp team, but they're very good at situational pressing. So they'll look for opportunities, they'll look for crucial times in the game, you know, before half-time, before full-time, to put pressure on. When a little balls looped up, you know, when it's going to be out of control. Then they'll press, they'll put pressure on. Mm. And that's where England have got to be.
They're actually a better version of what England used to be. You know, we would be quite a functional team, but we didn't get results. And it was pretty awful to watch. Now, I'm not saying Sweden is like watching Brazil or France or a team like that, but they are a level up from where England used to be with that functionality. That what's England's record against them? I mean, it's not great, is it? I know we won one game against them in the Sven years and the rest were draws. I think we've won twice in recent
nine games. Yeah.
It's, you know, so that tells its own story.
The story of this World Cup is its unpredictability. Now, the winners of the England tie will go on and face either Russia or Croatia, who meet in Sochi on Saturday. What are the limits of patriotism and the limits of the advantage that you get by being a home nation? Because you look at that Russia team and you think, how on earth have they got there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you only have to go back and look at World Cups. You know, we're talking about Sweden, go back to 1958 and they made the final. You look at the home advantage, it's massive. We all have concerns about the energy levels, let's say, of the Russian team. And, you know, probably a little bit Putin-inspired effort. You know, they'll all end up at Siberia FC if they... well, they would have if they would have gone out in the group stage.
They're national heroes now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, and they're at home, so they're sort of in a comfortable environment, which is an awful lot to do.
Their manager deserves a lot of credit. Again, managed expectations. Mm. We are the worst Russian football team you have seen for your lives. No one expected them to do anything. Then they go away and they pump Saudi Arabia in the first game, and all of a sudden... It's changed the way everyone's looking at it. It's just very clever.
It's hard to see them beating Croatia.
Croatia's last game, though, it's hard to see them beating the Croatia side who started the group phase so well. But I thought they looked a bit shorn of ideas in the last game.
But if you look at the character that Modric showed, and you look at the promise of someone like Rebic up front, who, you know, has already been linked with a move to Bayern Munich and his old manager... They should have too much for them, shouldn't they?
Yeah, you'd think so. But, you know, who thought Russia would get this far? People underestimate the effect of travel and being away from home and living out of a suitcase for athletes, any athletes, you know, sort of tennis players, football players, and the fact that you've got to live with this sort of itinerant sort of lifestyle and perform, and the Russians are in their own environment, and you know it makes you very, very comfortable, and it makes things easier.
France v Uruguay. Will the winners of the World Cup come from that game?
There's a very good chance, yeah. France, given what we've seen so far, I think they're moving through the gears, aren't they, as the tournament goes on, and that is an absolute positive for them. You know, they came together with question marks over whether they were a team, whether they were just some very talented individuals. They look very much like the talented individuals with questionable mentality in the first game. And game against Argentina, I mean, that just showed a real strength, not only of character, but of the strength in depth in terms of the personnel that they've got. We saw Kylian Mbappe coming through and sort of announcing himself, if you like, on the world stage. Look, we know he's a great young player anyway, but it was the game where he really said, look, take the ball by the horns here. And they are a very, very talented side. I think a lot will depend on Cavani's fitness. I think I've always said with Cavani that if you're a young striker or the parent of a young striker, watch his movement, because I've never seen a striker who gets into positions and moves like him. Not always his finishing isn't always the best, and yet in the last 16, he scored those two wonderful goals, didn't he, that said that there shouldn't be too many question marks over it. But I think the winner of the tournament, there's a very good chance it comes from that game. Mm.
This Pogba fella, where's he come from? I mean, you know, it's like, there's pace and power.
Manchester United should buy him, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they should. You know, I mean, he's unbelievable, you know, sort of getting forward, strong, powerful. Where's he been the last couple of seasons?
That one performance, he's playing now like he did in that 45 minutes in the second half against Manchester City. Mm. And that is the Pogba that you pay £90-odd million for. That is the Pogba that, as a manager, you go to your chief exec, your chairman, and you say, whatever it takes, you sign that player and we'll get him playing like that every week. United aren't doing that. But if he comes away as a World Cup winner, then United are in a great position for next season, because the confidence that will give him going into that is it will just be immeasurable.
Deschamps has taken a lot of stick over, you know, the last couple of years, and quite rightly so. But he set this team up to get the best out of Pogba. And, you know, perhaps a certain Jose Mourinho might look at it and think, oh, I'll have a rethink, you know, instead of...
I need to go and sign Kante.
Drop back Pogba.
Kante, I've never, ever seen him have a bad game, have you?
No, not certainly not that I can remember. Certainly, you're never, ever going to mark him less than a 7 out of 10 in your player ratings, are you? He's a phenomenal athlete. He's just vital to any team that he plays for, and that is the true measure of the man.
What about the coaches? You mentioned Deschamps. Let's look at Óscar Tabárez. 71 years old, 38 years a manager, 16 jobs. This could be the culmination of an amazing career, couldn't it? That most people aren't really aware of is Bobby Dalí.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's amazing. You look at it and the way he sets the team up, they play very much to the strengths. You know,
they've got the spine, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They've got the spine, they've got nous, they've got a little bit of cynicism in there. You know, it's
a little.
Yeah, it's just a little. Yeah. It's a game plan without any frills. They're probably not the most exciting team ever. You know, they're going to grind you down. They're going to make life uncomfortable for you when you've got the ball, and when they've got the ball, get it forward quickly.
Well, go, Dan. Do you think he's the best defender on form in the world at the moment?
There's certainly an argument for it. Yeah, I mean, I still think the best defender on the planet. If I was a football manager and I was given an unlimited checkbook, Ramos would be the one I'd go and sign ahead of Godin. But I think you can certainly say, form-wise, he's playing superbly. But Tony's absolutely right about the spine of that team. And a lot of the character of that team, which you can imagine comes from Tabárez to Godin, you know, in the back, right, you're the one who is... You've got everything. You can see the whole picture in front of you. Mm. And if someone's not trying, someone's not working hard enough, he's the man that the manager is looking to get him going. And I think with Cavani and Suarez at the other end of the field as well, it's just the balance that Uruguay have got is when the three of them are all fit is absolutely perfect.
Mm. As you say, probably Cavani's fitness will be decisive in this one. Brazil-Belgium, it's Brazil's seventh consecutive quarterfinal, but there is a sense that it's not quite business as usual. There's more sort of steel and solidity than there is samba there. Is that a more effective Brazil, or should they go back to their traditions?
Well, I mean, you're saying that, but I mean, Neymar, he's all samba and no steel, isn't he? You know, there's not a great deal of balance there. At times, they look short of ideas going forward, and Neymar is very selfish on the ball. You know, he's not opening up for other people. I think they're fairly limited, Brazil. I've been disappointed with them so far. The defence is more solid than some of the Brazil teams in the past, but I also think the vulnerable you can get at them. I don't see Brazil winning it.
They're a more European side than they've ever been, which is, you know, you would imagine because so many of them, I know for years they've been playing over here, a lot of the Brazil players, but it's almost like generations now are, they're not even getting to a certain age in Brazil before they come over to Europe to start playing, so they're losing a lot of that flair and a lot of the flamboyant nature.
The 94 sides were pretty grim, really, you know, sort of in Brazilian terms, you know, didn't have the flair, you know. So I mean, it's not unprecedented, but I don't see this team being as solid and working for each other as much as the 94 team.
I think Belgium have got a real chance. The individuals that Belgium have got in this game are to a man, Neymar aside, and maybe Coutinho. Would you rather have Coutinho or Kevin De Bruyne in your side? Coutinho or Eden Hazard in your side? You know, they have got the talent to match them.
De Bruyne hasn't been at his normal level, though, has he?
No, I mean, he's playing slightly out of position, isn't he? He's playing in a bit more of a reserved role than and doesn't quite have the licence that Pep Guardiola gives him at Manchester City. But I think Hazard, you know, I know he's probably not ignited the way we know he can, but I still think he's played at a really good level as well. And I'm very excited to see him playing against the Brazilian defence because I think he will have opportunities. And for someone like Lukaku, you know, a bulldozer of a man to go up against Thiago Silva, I think that will be one of the great matchups in the whole of this World Cup finals because that will really tell us the level that Lukaku is operating at the moment.
Well, I mean, again, Hazard's like Sterling, we were talking about him earlier on. Even when he's not, doesn't appear to be having a good game, when he picks up the ball, people flock towards him. They're scared of him. Yeah. You know, they're going to at least double up on him. and probably put a third man, and suddenly the space opens.
And De Bruyne's going to have a big game sooner rather than later. You just know that, don't you? Know he's not going to stay quiet forever.
Against Japan, the last goal, the minute he picked that ball up, you were like, oh, here we go. Yeah. When he does that.
What about broad terms? I know you went to see Roberto Martinez before they left. I'll have to put my hands up. I'm not convinced by him. And been hailed for his substitutions in that Japan game, but I didn't see he had any option. Is that a potential weakness?
No, I mean, again, I'm probably slightly biased because I've spent a bit of time with him, and you listen to someone talking, and it's very easy to.
He invented football.
I'll tell you what, he is one of those managers. I did an interview with him for a book, and I had 2 hours with him, and you go away from that interview thinking, oh, that was great, and then you transcribe the tape. And it's just words. I just look at his substance and I wonder where it is.
I disagree with that. I mean, you probably spent longer with him. I had sort of 45 minutes with him and I went through and I've managed to get a good few pieces out of it. And I find him a very interesting character. I can understand some of the grievances that Everton fans had with him at times, but I think you look at the statistics, he improved Everton during his time with the club. And I think working with a group of players like the Belgians have got at the moment is not as easy as perhaps you'd think. You know, you'd think, well, we've got all these great individual talents, but you've got to make them this team. And I think sometimes you can have too many flair or too many quality players, and sometimes you just need the absolute workhorses, the lads who are willing to do the dog work at the back, and they haven't always got that in this Belgium side. But I think, look, they're at a quarterfinal against Brazil, and if he wins that game, I think there can be few questions for him, then.
I would hazard a guess that Vincent Kompany is a very influential figure in that dressing room. Let's put it like that.
Oh, without a doubt. Talking about Martinez, one international manager said of him, he said, like, I want him to speak at my funeral because he'll convince everyone I'm alive. and there is that element to...
I know that he does. Yeah. He does have that. There's no... Everyone can see that. But I think... Yes, Vincent Kompany will be very vocal. I think De Bruyne will be. I think Hazard will be. These are the big characters. And I think sometimes the greatest management style will be to just actually let them get on with it with a little word here and there. It doesn't always have to be about the manager being this central figure.
Mm. Yeah. Can I just pop back to Neymar for a second? Because, there are some pretty well-sourced reports, it seems, this morning that Real Madrid are going to pay €272 million for him. His talent's unquestionable. His temperament drives me mad and probably countless millions mad. When you look at him, is he the epitome of what a modern footballer, has become? A bit of a show pony.
Yeah, an awful lot of a show pony. I mean, clearly he's got all the ability in the world. And to be fair, I've only seen him live, half a dozen times. But on none of those occasions has he particularly impressed me. On the ball, he's got the talent. His movement off the ball isn't great. His decision-making isn't great. There's almost a, he thinks his talent will carry him through, and it probably will, and everyone will love him. He'll be a superstar for his entire career. But you know what? There's no generosity of spirit about him. There's no...
It reminds me a bit of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, then. I agree with you. I've never seen him live and thought, I get what all the fuss is about. It's not like watching Messi or Ronaldo live when it just smacks you in the face. Occasionally you have to go looking for it a bit with Neymar. Yeah. And he has clearly got everything in the locker. But this whole trying to run games with his mouth rather than running games with the feet, when he's got the capability to do that, you just want to tell him, just forget all the histrionics, just get on with it. Forget the silly little dives, Stay on your feet and you'll get even more goals. But the Real Madrid move, I mean, this has been talked about for the last year, wasn't it? There was always the suggestion that you can't go straight from Barcelona to Real Madrid these days. Mm. So PSG was the perfect sort of holding zone for him, and then off he'd go. So if Ronaldo's move to Juventus is to come in, then Neymar would be one hell of a replacement for him.
Just a bit, yeah. And character is a pretty underestimated thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd say that the Real are probably the losing Cristiano, who is probably one of the best one-off game on cup game players in the entire history of the sport. He's fantastic, and you can't doubt his mental toughness. And if they get Neymar, they'll be getting a whole heap of mental weakness.
Mm-hmm. Some questions to finish from the viewers and listeners. We'll start with Craig Griffiths. Tom, if you want to field this one. Now we're in the last eight. Is this a successful World Cup? If so, does that release Southgate from any pressure he might feel by being the highest ranked team in our side of the competition?
Yeah, I think the quarterfinals is a successful World Cup. I don't think there's any two ways about that. I think if you'd have asked everyone before the start of the tournament and you know, people were giving an honest answer, an honest appraisal rather than a tub-thumping their hopes, I think people would have said, look, let's get out of the group stages, maybe win the last 16 game. Certainly, if we're going to lose the last 16 game, we're going to have to do it fighting against a really great side in the tournament. But if we can get through that and we get to the quarterfinals, then you have to say it has been a job well done. And I think whatever happens now, talking to people at the weekend and they were saying, oh, you know, would we have been better getting Japan than Colombia? But for me, if we'd gone home from a World Cup having beaten Tunisia, Panama, lost to Belgium, and then either lost to Japan or even beaten Japan, it wouldn't have told me anything new about this team. It wouldn't have told me anything that I don't already know. Whereas now, I look at it and I think we've got past Colombia and we've got past them on penalties. So it has told me something new about them. It's told me that they've got this mental edge, the ability to create their own history, as Gareth Southgate said. And I think whatever happens in the next game, providing... Actually, no, I was going to say whatever happens, they'll come home and it'll be well done. I think we have to put in a fighting performance. I think there will be disappointment if we lose to Sweden, though.
I kind of disagree. I mean, I've been saying, with the pace he's got, I've been saying for 2 years, if I had that much pace and I was the manager, I'd take them to the semi-finals. There's not a lot of great teams in international football at the moment. You know what? Semi-final, bare minimum for me.
Yeah.
Would you have said that before the competition?
I've said it on here how many times? Okay.
You certainly did. You obviously answered David Kershaw's question where he's saying, would going out in the quarters be considered a massive failure? I'll just try and nuance that question a bit. About the media reaction. You know, we've all been in the past when there have been England disappointments and everyone has piled in. If England do lose, what will be the reaction in our newspapers, on our airwaves?
I think there'll be certain voices that will be shrill and strident. Going out at this level is per. Slightly poor per, but per. And there'll be people who'll go mad. But I think one of the things is the way Southgate has done things over the past few months. He's likable. There's a lot of players in the squad who are likable. And it's harder to write about and criticise people that you like than it is the people who you don't like. I mean, you know, it's I don't think we'll see Southgate mocked up as a vegetable on the back of a page. One of the things is, which people don't realise, the press pack who follow England are so desperate for England to win, and they have so much emotional investment on it. People think they want England to lose. Couldn't be further from the truth. They desperately want England to win. I think sometimes that desperation for them to win and the disappointment manifests itself on what seems to be irrational criticism. But I think there will be a more rational treatment of England if they lose. I haven't said that. If they lose to Sweden, if they probably could do with a bit of a kicking.
If they lose badly. But I think what this whole tournament's done now is given England hope. And you said yourself, the undercooked in 2 years, I think it's given us a bit of belief that, OK, we've got the monkey off the back in terms of the penalty shootout. We can go with a bit more confidence, a bit more belief, and a bit more hope and enjoyment about it, rather than thinking that everything's just going to be the same old every time we turn up for a tournament.
In this tournament, you haven't heard the phrase... The weight of the shirt, you know, that's disappeared. And that's in part because of Southgate.
Yeah, and also the narrative a bit, hasn't it?
And also in part because they're a young team, they're not jaundiced, they haven't got that cynicism, you know, where they've been through the tournaments, it's all gone wrong. And they're an egocentric team. The England teams of recent vintage had too many players who wanted the side building around them. There isn't a lot of that going on here. Yeah.
Craig Bowker asked, could the bigger nations learn from the smaller nations on how to develop players with limited resources?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, one of my favourite performances at the World Cup was Iran's against Spain. They just completely changed my opinion of what their football would be like and what it could be like. And I think a lot of credit needs to go to the smaller nations for everything they've done at these finals. I hope we're going to see in the not too distant future a team from Africa winning the tournament, a team from Asia winning the tournament, because it has just showed that if you put your faith in a development system and give people time and let it come together, it can work very well.
It's the final one. Daniel Stone himself says it's a fantasy question. Which England player from any era would you transport into the team to better our chances at this World Cup?
Well, great question.
Yeah, very good question. Just sort of thinking about it, you think, well, Bobby Charlton's given thrust in the midfield, given the way they've set up, given the weaknesses, I'd put Tony Adams in, right in the middle. An organiser, a leader, a defender.
I'd like to see Brian Robson in there, I think. You know, someone really rolling the sleeves up and driving them forward from midfield. And behind three lads who we know are very creative, getting them to be as creative as they can be.
He dislocates his shoulder just before half-time. First game. And then,
I'd love to see the serenity of Bobby Moore at the back, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, look, we could. I mean, if you imagine putting Greavesy up front and saying, there you go, there's five chances, Jimmy, we'd win the World Cup, wouldn't we?
I think they're all great calls, but, you know, it's. I think people forget how good Brian Robson was.
Yeah.
Really top class.
Yeah, absolutely. So, finally, it's prediction time. We'll work out whether you think England will get to the semi-final. I want your last four, please.
I think England and Croatia will be on one side. I think France will go through. Belgium, despite Martinez.
So, if you've got Belgium in, who else?
Yeah, Belgium. I think France will beat Uruguay. I hope England will beat Sweden. And
Croatia have got to beat Russia.
I love Croatia, one of the great countries on the planet. I fancy Croatia all the way through this tournament until the last 16 game, and it was almost as if they peaked too soon. Russia, whole nation behind them, I think they might just have the edge.
Well, I'm going for France. My original choice is cup winners, Brazil, Croatia and England. But you'd best prepare for penalties. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.